you got to race for pink slips and get into a fight with like a rival mildly threatening street gang
named like the Thunderbirds or something.
Yeah,
a little singing and dancing probably. Yeah,
back then all gangs were named after like early model muscle cars or cheap liquor. That's just the way it was.
We're the Carlo Rossies.
You're listening to Nothing Important. Please enjoy the show.
Gentlemen, on the Someone Important hotline is Joe DeRosa. Joe, how's it going?
Hi, guys.
thanks
for having me on.
No, thank you for coming on. I apologize for Dave screwing everything up and delaying us like 15 minutes.
And I will accept Brian's apology of me delaying everything and screwing it up for 15 minutes.
I like to screw him under the bus. I'm a fan of that kind of thing, so that's good work.
Well, you know, right from the get-go, you got to set the tone, right? So
that's half our shtick, so yeah.
Right.
Perpetual bus drivers we are.
Right. But on the bright side, Dave got a brand new iPhone 6, so he's all techie.
Yeah,
you
will be the inaugural guest with the new interface, and it sounds much better than my old phone, so people might actually understand you.
What phone did you use
that? I switched from a Motorola to a Primeco. No, I had a Galaxy S3. Nice. Galaxy S3.
S3, Jesus. Hey. Holy shit, that's a few back, man. That's an old phone.
It was my two-year upgrade. Yeah, the two-year upgrade.
And you switched to the iPhone, did you get the 6 or the 6 Plus?
The 6 Plus, or no, I got the 6, because I think the 6 Plus comes out Friday. They kept talking about how they were preparing for the big... Everybody be waiting outside the doors on Friday because the 6 Plus is coming out. And I was like, what's the difference? Well, and the guy's like, I have Android. I don't know.
The 6 Plus is, I have the 6 Plus. It's out. The new one comes out Friday, like the 6 Plus S or something.
That's what it is, the S version, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, congrats. Welcome to the iPhone family. You're officially an aging hipster.
I was going to say, now I need to go buy myself like a flat brim cap and some white sunglasses and actually wear pants for a while because I'm more prone to shorts.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to cuff the pants like a 1950s greaser, though. That's the key part of the look.
Roll my cigarettes up in the sleeve. Yeah.
Right, yeah. You got to race for pink slips and get into a fight with like a rival mildly threatening street gang
named like the Thunderbirds or something.
Yeah,
a little singing and dancing probably. Yeah,
back then all gangs were named after like early model muscle cars or cheap liquor. That's just the way it was.
We're the Carlo Rossies.
How often do you guys do this show?
Every week, man. Yeah, every week.
Every week, and it's always Better Call Saul focused.
No, actually, what we do every week is we do Nothing Important, which is me and Dave just kind of sharing antidotes, and then we usually have a guest on. Who's usually like a comedian or an actor or something, or a prominent podcaster or something like that. And then for It's All Good, Man, that's usually during in season. And we do that like twice a week. But in the off season, since nobody's watching Better Call Saul, what we've been doing to keep it going and keep the momentum with that, because that actually became a really, really successful podcast. And so what we did to keep it going from that is we've been reaching out to members of the cast, and that's actually why you're on, is I actually saw you on Twitter, and I'm like, that's the vet, that's the guy, like, we got to get him on,
the This is, by the way, to everybody listening, this is everything you explained to me before we started recording, and I already forgot, so I apologize. Tell me the ins and outs of all that before we... I have a listening problem.
Well, that's okay. We, I don't...
Yeah. So do our listeners, I don't blame so it's all good.
Right. Yeah. Plus, we're very forgettable, so...
No, it's not you, it's me. It's all me.
Oh, I hear that all the time.
So it's cool that you guys, yeah, that you guys do the, I mean, it's cool that you do both podcasts, but it's really cool that you do the Saw one. And, you know, I like fan stuff like that. That's really neat.
Oh, totally. And you know, what's funny is, I think we've told the story a couple times before, but me and Dave kind of started the Better Call Saw podcast. It's Saw Goodman to kind of almost latch onto something we knew was going to be popular to promote the other podcast.
Riding coattails.
Yeah, but then we kind of fell in love with the show, which made us happy because we kept talking about, because we actually started the podcast a few weeks before the show started, just talking about rumors and like half-ass
speculations
and ideas. Yeah, we're like, what if the show fucking sucks? Like, we are stuck with this show throughout. But it hasn't sucked at all. It's been a really, really great, well-produced show, which I guess we all should have expected from the get-go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was a fairly safe bet. I think people are... I'm glad the show's being so well-received, and it's a great show, and I'm glad people are recognizing that, because I think a lot of the time with these like sort of sequel and prequel situations, people are unnecessarily hard on the product because it doesn't take them to the exact emotional and mental state they were in the first time they saw the original thing or whatever. So I'm glad that number one, the show is really good, but I'm also glad that the fans are excited about it. And, you know, and people are really liking it because, you know, like those Hobbit movies, for instance, I thought people were way too harsh on that, man. I was, Jesus Christ, guys. They're not that different from the Lord of the Rings movies. Like it's kind of the same shit. Why is everybody like saying these things are terrible? You know, like they're not terrible. Maybe you don't like them as much, but Jesus Christ, go easy on them. You know?
Well, you know what's funny about like Better Call Saul is I think we talked with Patrick Fabian about this. It doesn't seem there's as much of that. Like people still try to compare it to Breaking Bad, but the show's well done that people are like, oh well, fuck it. This is a totally different beast. Like it seems like so there's some people like, oh well, it ain't as good as Breaking Bad, jerk jerk jerk, wank wank wank. But most people for the most part see it as its own its own identity, which I think is just a credit to the production and the writing team and everybody involved.
Yeah, I think they really, really did a good job. And they did. I saw Mark Hamill in an interview about the new Star Wars movie coming out say, he said the reason this new movie is going to be so good is because it's exactly what you want as a fan. It's giving you stuff you remember and love, but it's got a whole new like wrapping paper on it. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of new cool stuff. So like, I kind of think that's exactly the way Better Call Saul feels. Like it's, you know, it's, there are the elements of the things you love and there's enough familiar stuff in there that it feels like the same universe and the same characters and all that stuff. But like, it's still a completely different show. And
yeah. I was going right,
to, its own thing.
Universe you know? Thing. That was what I was going to mention is that you still feel like you're in that, but the cast is like totally different with a few crossover potential, and they're leaving potential for other things to happen too, dropping hits about Walter White showing up and all that stuff. So
yeah, it's been cool seeing like what, you know. So I don't know about the other cast members, but like I know nothing, so it's like I kind of learn as we go too. So it's pretty cool seeing like when something seems like a hint or a nod to something else, you know. It's exciting.
You know, a lot of the folks we've talked to have said that it seems like everybody is left out in the cold as opposed to what, like in regards to what their part is or where they fit in with the show until they actually see the show.
Yeah. It's you don't know really anything. in a good way. Like, it's not bad. Like, they give you enough that you know what you're doing in the scenes that you're doing and stuff. But like, you know, they're clearly very protective of the content and the story. And I don't blame them. You know, I'm happy that there are people doing that again with the productions they're doing, you know, because I'm happy J.J. Abrams is super. I'm the biggest like Star Wars fan ever. So I'm like happy that he, for instance, is being super protective about stuff leaking and whatever. And, you know, and he said, I'm doing this for the fans. So you guys can like enjoy the movie and have a great time and not have everything ruined before you get there. So I like that the Saw folks are doing that same exact type of approach. It's good for the fans, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Did you have
totally?
Did you have like an interesting audition process? Because most of the people we've talked to, it's been kind of they've had interesting stories about how they got involved in the show in the first place and the process they had to go through and all the, like the cryptic auditions and like similar scenes, but not the actual scene, just to get a character feel, stuff like that. Did you have anything like that for your role?
It was fairly simple, actually. Like I went in. I got the audition the night before and I went in the next morning and, you know, I'd really worked on it. And it ended up being the thing I auditioned with was ended up basically being the scene, my first scene on the show. But it was written a little different. They had changed some of the details. So, you know, it wasn't until I got hired and got sent the script for my first episode that they were like, you're a vet, by the way. Because it wasn't like, I forget what it was originally, but they masked that. So, but like, it was that scene though, and I really worked on it the night before, and then I went in and I was like, oh, I got this whole great thing worked out in my head. And I would do it, and then the casting director would like give me a note, and then we'd change it. And then I'd get another note, and then we'd change it. And then I'd get another note, and then we'd change it. And then I left thinking, well, I'm not getting this. I clearly did it wrong 5 times or whatever. But then I got it and I was like, oh, cool. Maybe that was a test. I don't know.
Yeah. Part of the process.
Or maybe I just finally got it right. Or you never know with casting, you know, sometimes directions are a good thing. Sometimes they're a bad thing. Sometimes you go in and read and they go, great. And you leave and you go, all right, I guess it was great. And then you realize later, like, oh, it wasn't. They just thought it sucked. So they were like,
it's like telling a band that they're tight after the show. You guys are tight.
Yeah. Yeah. So you never quite know, you know, which way it's going to go. But the casting director of that show was really amazing. And she was one of the best casting directors I've ever auditioned for. So it was really cool, man. But, you know, it was all very hush hush, top secret stuff. So then you can't tell anybody. When you get it, you're like super excited, you know, like you book this really cool role on something. It's definitely the coolest like role I've ever had in anything. It's the biggest role I've ever, you know, I'm primarily a stand-up comic and I'd say I'm a writer second. I mean, acting is usually like sort of third. And you know, not because I respected third, it's just kind of where it positions in my life, in my career.
Right.
So, you know, I've had a lot of like walk on in one scene kind of things, you know, like I did one episode of Bored to Death and I did one episode of Louie and all that stuff was really super cool. But this was the first time it was like, I got to actually come back and have like a little bit of an arc and, you know, I hope the character lives on. That would be really cool.
I was going to say, does this arc continue into season 2?
I don't know.
We're kind of,
I don't know. it's very thing to thing, you know? So that's what I mean. Like it's super secret, man. It's super secret. So, but I don't blame them. It's, you know, people leak this crap all over the place and
right. It's you know, more fun for us to just sit and come up with our bullshit theories than to actually talk to people about it anyway, because then we can be told that we're wrong and that we're idiots, and that's half the fun for us.
Right. Yeah, except for the one time way early in the series, way early, like in season 1, I was being a smartass, and I'm like, oh, well, you know what? I bet Chuck is actually actually a dickhead. And I stand by that. And like the whole time I'm like, no way, dude, it's Chuck. He's a dick. And then it turned out being right. But everything else I said was like so completely off base. It was like that dude doesn't even watch this show.
That's funny. That's really funny.
And I think I said Tuco was the big reveal in the first series, and I was trying to say somebody else, but I accidentally said Tuco and ended up being right. So that's my big claim to my bold prediction that came true.
So you
predict a thing correctly. Like that's a good feeling. I saw the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, and for the first time, I guessed the twist.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Early on, and I was very proud of myself.
This time, there was no twist. No.
Yeah, every other time, I was like, I did not see that coming. But this time, I was like, oh, what's this? And then I was right. It also sucks, I realized, when you figure it out that early.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there being like, please don't let it be the thing I guessed. Because then it's just kind of boring.
That was Devil.
Yeah.
That happened to me during Devil, not going to lie. I saw that coming.
Yeah, Devil. Did you like that movie? I'm a big horror fan. I was on the fence with that one.
Yeah, I would say on the fence. I thought they tried a little too much to pull some emotions and just instead of just trying to like put out a scene and let you feel it. That's kind of
right.
What I was thinking.
Right. Yeah, I'm a big horror fan, and unfortunately, I find myself saying, I'm not sure how I felt about that after so many horror movies. I wish there were more that. I was just like, yeah, that was awesome.
Right.
You know?
Have you ever seen Exam? I'm gonna start asking a lot of people that question.
I didn't. That's the Japanese one, right?
I think it's an American. It must be an American remake. It's definitely an American. Audition?
I'm thinking of Audition. Yeah,
that one I have yet to see. That's on my bucket list. Exam is a bunch of people in a room trying to get a job. And it's kind of it's almost like Cube. You guys have seen Cube, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like that. And then just kind of people start going crazy. And then there's a little bit of a Reservoir Dogs element at the end. And that's a little nuts. It's cool, though. But it's so odd. It was in such an odd watch. I'm very curious to find somebody else that liked it as much as I did.
Is it on Netflix or anything?
It has been for a long time. I'm not sure if it still is, but I definitely watched it on Netflix.
It sounds familiar, man. I feel like I've seen it. Maybe it's on my queue or something. But it sounds very familiar to me, so I'll check it out.
Yeah, I would recommend it. You can talk now, Brian. Sorry.
Yeah, see, for once I'm speechless. I don't watch very many movies, so I was just listening to you guys go back and forth.
I really love horror movies so much. I want to see that Good Night Mommy movie this week.
That one
is an Austrian. It might only be out in New York and LA right now because it's from Austria.
Mm.
So it might. I'm assuming it's got a limited release at the moment, but it looks really creepy. It's like these twin brothers. Their mother comes home from the hospital, and I don't know if she's had plastic surgery or if she was in an accident and had to have reconstructive surgery, but. The point is that she comes home and her face is covered in all these bloody bandages and she looks really creepy. And then she starts kind of acting weird. And then the kids are like, we're not sure if that's our mom or not.
Oh,
so it's pretty creepy shit.
Yeah. If that's done right, that could be awesome.
My friend saw it. He said it was really, really good. So I hope, I want to see it. The foreign horror movies usually take it a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
Than the American ones do these days. I was talking to somebody the other day and I was like, I can't believe with American horror now, it's when one is rated R, I'm like, oh wow, great. so many of them are PG-13 now.
It's so tame. Yeah.
Yeah. They're very teeny boppery, right? Like they're very bubblegum.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then a lot of the indie stuff, it's just hard to find. There's a lot of indie stuff out there that, has good intention behind it, but they don't get the budget or they can't make it as quality as you'd like it to be.
Right.
And then there's a lot of quality out there with budget, meaning, or not quality work, but I mean, they can make it look good because of the budget, but then it's got no heart and soul to it. So Yeah. It seems to be hard to find things in between the two.
Yeah, the middle of that Venn diagram is pretty small. I'm hoping Circle. We just talked to Michael Nardelli, who's in the movie Circle, coming out, and I'm hoping that that nails it because he talks highly of it. It seems to have a plot that I really like, so we're hoping.
What Circle? I haven't heard of that yet.
That is 50 people wake up in a room, and then every 2 minutes somebody dies. Something like that.
Jesus,
right. Right, but it's like kind of like 12 Angry Men, though, in a way, right? Like they have to like talk, like figure out who's going to be the next to die, right? Isn't that how it works?
Like a Survivor, I guess, situation.
you like any movie where it's people in a room.
Apparently that's like my thing. Yeah.
You get very excited by a sort of government job situation.
I can freak myself out more in my own head than I can by watching any horror movie. Like Dead Silence was one of the scariest movies I ever saw, only because when it got so quiet is when I started freaking out. You know,
man, I'm a fan of, I'm forgetting that director's name, and he's like the biggest guy out there right now. But
Bossman.
But you know, Dead Silence is the puppet one, right?
That's
the other one you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's the guy that did Saw. It's the guy that did The Last Fast and Furious. He did The Conjuring.
I think it's Darren Lynn Bossman, isn't it? Or am I thinking of a different member?
No, he's an Asian guy. I want to say James Wan.
I think that might be it.
Well, in any case, I like a lot of his work, but Dead Silence, like I watched it over and over. I want to love it. I want to love it so bad because it's puppets being evil. I mean, that's really scary. That's always scary. But I just can't get into it. And that whole thing, I don't know who made the decision for Donnie Wahlberg to walk around with an electric razor constantly, like always shaving. It's ridiculous. What is it?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what that choice was, but I just can't get into it. I've tried.
I think that was totally a theater based experience because it was a packed house, and when it would get quiet, like it literally got quiet, and it never happens in a theater. And that's when I just kind of, that has a special moment, I guess, for me. So then I would go and tell people.
Like uneasy.
Yeah, it's really uneasy. And you just feel the tension in the audience. So I would tell people like, oh, you got to check this movie out. I was freaked out. And then they're like, dude, that movie sucked. And then I was,
this is actually a funny horror movie story. So I did, I was in Grand Theft Auto 5, the video game. Nice. And the scenes I was in were with this actor, Randy, and he's a really great guy and really nice and everything. So anyway, like, you know, we were like in between takes and we were just kind of talking about stuff. And I go, I don't remember why. Or I said, are you going to be out in LA at any point? And he said, yeah, I might come out, at some point because there's going to be this Cabin Fever remake somewhere down the line. And I want to come out for that. So I'm thinking he's just like a big horror fan. Because it was pretty far off at that point. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, I don't like Cabin Fever that much. It's okay. And he was like, really? What don't you like about it? And I was like, I don't know. It tries to be funny and it's not that funny. And I mean, there's some cool gross out parts, but I don't know. It's just kind of dumb. And I was like, you're a big fan of it, huh? And he was like, well, I wrote it. And I was, I was like, oh, okay.
Foot in mouth.
So I went out and bought it after that. I was like, I gotta give it a second chance. He's a good dude. And I love every other thing Eli Roth has done. I've been really into,
Yeah, but, I would have put Cabin Fever at the lower end of my Eli Roth experience. Still waiting for
Hostel
the Thanksgiving.
Hostel to me is a masterpiece. Hostel is one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Oh,
in my
people
life.
Left the theater. Yeah, that was awesome.
That was a life changer for me. I was just like, oh my God. Like I hadn't been that invested in a character at the end of a movie since like I saw like Indiana Jones when I was a kid. I was like rooting so hard for that guy to get out at the end and get his payback. I love that movie.
I agree. That is, yeah.
Yeah.
Never saw the sequels, but the first one was a pretty special movie.
They're okay. Two kind of I wasn't that into, but I liked three. I thought three had some really cool elements to it. And three to me felt more like the first one. Two felt like they kind of go in this other direction where there's still the stuff about the victims and stuff, but like it's more there's two stories happening, and one of the stories is very focused on the two guys that are signing up to do it, to do the killing. So it kind of gets into that whole world, like how that works. It's a very typical horror movie sequel in that sense. Like, you know, for some reason, horror movie sequels always go into like the technical aspects of how things work.
Yeah. Or like the motivations behind the killer.
Yeah. And they did that in like Insidious 2. And, you know, like they start kind of explaining like, well, here's what was going on in the first one.
Yeah.
Which isn't that scary, but sometimes it can be interesting. But 3 doesn't do that. 3 kind of gets back to basics, and I enjoyed it.
Cool. Well, then I will watch those based on your recommendation.
Yeah. Well, there you go, guys.
As long as there's people in a room.
This has now become my favorite podcast we've done, and let me tell you why. It's because we called to talk about Better Call Saul, and you guys went on about horror movies. And you ever watch two people talk about something that they're very knowledgeable of, but you have no idea about the subject matter, so you're just kind of like enthralled by the conversation?
Yes, I do. Just about every conversation I have. just watching somebody else outsmart me. I'm like, okay.
Because I always give Dave shit for his taste in movies, like all the goddamn time. But it's awesome that like you guys are talking about like the horror films and stuff. I'm just sitting here listening. I'm like, wow, that's pretty impressive critique for something that, you know.
So. Well, good. I'm glad we didn't bore you to shit.
No, not at all. I can't wait to post it because it's
Brian, thanks for coming on Dave and Joe Talk Movies. We appreciate you being our guest, Brian.
No, thank you. No problem. Anytime.
Yeah, well, I had a nice talk. It was nice.
Awesome. No, that's great.
Is there any Better Call Saul things you need to know before I go?
Well, let's see. We covered you're the veterinarian. You don't know if you're going to come on season 2. Although I do got to say, I hope you do. I hope you do come back for season 2, because one of the things that strike me about it as well is every series has their ancillary characters that kind of help to move the plot along. But Better Call Saul is the first show I've ever seen where people are almost pushy about getting the ancillary characters to come back, like Betsy Kettleman, like there's a huge fan base for her. And then we had Mel Rodriguez who plays Marco, and like people were like, man, we got to see more of Marco. I hope he's not really dead because we want flashbacks. Him, or maybe they could, yeah, or maybe they could do like even further flashbacks. And it's the same with the vet. You were in two episodes, but your casting, I guess, yeah, your casting was so well that, you know, like you could almost watch like a whole new series on the vet. So it shows that it wasn't like, oh, here's this some plot point character they just kind of toss in to keep the plot moving. Like it seems like there's some real like depth and gravity to what you did, even in that small of a role.
Thanks. Well, keep that kind of talk up.
Right.
Well, I'm gonna go on record and say that you are gonna be in season 2, because it's a pretty influential character in Jimmy's quest for, or you know, journey to Saul. So
no, well, Mike's.
Yeah. Oh no, Mike. Yeah, sorry, that was Mike.
Yeah.
But it's all wrapped into one. It's the work is you know, everybody's related.
Right. Absolutely. So. So I guess that's our first official prediction of season 2 is that you'll be back, which this will make like the third character campaign that we're like trying to start between Betsy Kettleman, Marco, and now the vet.
Well, I really hope so. It's, you know, it's been and honestly, I'm not saying this for any points with the show. Like it's been a really great experience every time I've been over there, and you know, getting to do all those scenes with Jonathan has been amazing. And it's just an exciting, it's an exciting environment to be on. You know, they get, it's cool. Like the producers and the writers and the directors, they get excited as it all starts to come to life on camera.
Right. Well, I do have a, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I do have another question. How long was it before you found out you got the part, and how long before you filmed? Like, was it a quick turnaround?
Yeah, it wasn't very long. It was, I think I found out like a week later or something.
Gotcha.
And, okay. And then we were shooting the next week or something. It was fast, man.
Yeah, because we talked to Mel, and he said that his turnaround was 24 hours. Yeah. And so I was like, man, that's pretty interesting. So it's always interesting to hear, you know, how quick the turnaround, because me and Dave, we're complete outsiders and nobody. So we have no clue about how any of this process works. So it's incredibly fast. Even the turnaround for a week, you know, because like shit, like in my real life job, if I get a new job, I'm still like, oh, I got like 2 fucking weeks. And then like all of a sudden I concoct like this, like a trip I had to go on for a weekend. So to add another a week to the time where I would start my new job and you know, just kind of prolong. And I still feel like I jumped into it too quickly. It's amazing to me that actors and such, you guys have such quick turnarounds and how you can keep it all together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's certainly not always like that. There are other things where you know, it's months,
yeah,
and you don't hear anything or, you know, and then finally something comes through and you go, Jesus, I thought that I definitely didn't get that, you know? So it's always like, it's always different. It's just different frequencies and it's how shows work. And I'm assuming with Better Call Saul, like, you know, they work in a faster fashion because, you know, part of it is keeping it all fresh and secret and quiet and whatever, you know, you have stuff laying around for months and months and months, you know,
it gets out.
That's to me, that's how shit starts to leak out of it ever. So,
right.
Or I would at least assume so, but, you know, but that's how it was too. Cause when I did Grand Theft Auto, like, which was also another like really cool, like dream come true to be in a video game, especially, you know, what I would consider to be the godfather of video games.
Yeah, one of the biggest franchises in all of games. Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally. I have Grand Theft Auto 5. Who did you play?
There's a TV show you can watch called, Jack Howitzer. Jack Howitzer is, I think he's made his first appearance in Grand Theft Auto 3. And he's like an action star. He's sort of a Stallone type, except he's crazy. And he really kills people and stuff. And he's really nuts. So anyway, in Grand Theft Auto 5, there's a TV show that you can watch. And when you go into the house to save your game or whatever, called Jack Howitzer, and it's a reality show about him getting out of prison and
awesome.
Trying to make a comeback through a reality show. And I play his agent. So the whole show is just me and the two characters. I play this guy, Rufus Bellows, who's like a cokehead, you know, real shit heel of an agent. You know, because we were doing the TV show and not characters in the game, well, they did mocap for, we did it originally, obviously, for the last generation systems, like 360 and PS3.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, they were only mocapping in video games, period. They would only mocap certain characters. And because we were on a TV show, we got to do mocap and not just voices. So, you know, number one, you get to be in a video game. Number two, it's Grand Theft Auto 5. And then number three, it's you. Like, you're in the game. Like I'm in the game.
Very cool.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. And those guys were there. I have some old friends over there at Rockstar. So it's, you know, that was really fun to get to work with those guys and do that finally.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that scene. Cause I know what you're talking about. You're like in Michael's, mansion, but if you watch the TV screen, there's so much content in those games and so much like stuff that you can just find. I sat there and watched cartoons in the game on the TV in Michael's mansion on the projector in the living room. Like, there was like cartoons for like 25 minutes, and you're just amazed at like, holy shit, so much goes into the production of just the sound. And these are like full-fledged cartoons that they drew, like a whole 25-minute cartoon.
Yeah, it's insane. And I didn't even know, like, they're, as I said, they're another like top secret bunch. Mm-hmm. Like, they won't tell you anything. So my friend Laszlo, I was on a radio. I used to appear on this radio show, Opie and Anthony in New York, that was on for a little while. Or it was on for many years, actually, but it's a different show now. But anyway, I was on that show a lot, and this guy Laszlo from Rockstar was a fan of the show. And I finally met him. He's like, you know, I usually have the ONA guys on in the game. Like, you should come and do a part in GTA 5. And I was like, dude, I'm there. Like, yeah. What do you want me to do? And he's like, I don't know. You know, I was thinking it'd be fun if you were like one of the radio DJs. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Like, yes. Like, let's do it. So months and months went by. And then I got a call. And he's like, can you come in on Wednesday to meet with me about this? And I'm like, yeah. And I go in, and you got to fill out like 87 non-disclosure forms and things that say you won't use your cell phone and everything. And then this lady's like, can you come into this room? We have to fix this harness on your head. And I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Worst voiceover gig ever.
I wasn't rude. I didn't say it that rudely, but I was just like, what are you talking about? And, I was like, well, we need to get a face scan. And I was like, can I ask what I'm doing? And she's like, yeah, well, it's for mocap. You're going to be in the game. And that's like how I found out.
Oh, wow.
I
was like,
dude, that's like, awesome. Oh, I was just here to be a DJ.
I'm so jealous of anybody that gets to be a voiceover for like any video game or cartoon. That's like my secret, my secret thing that I always wish I somehow fall into. That's so cool.
Yeah, that was a really cool moment. And like when the first time I saw it, where it was like, here's you in a video game, I was like, oh my God. You know, it's like getting to, you know, to me it was like getting to be in like a Disney cartoon or yeah. You know, like one of the yeah, like really iconic thing.
That's just amazing. Are you coming to Chicago anytime soon for comedy, stand-up comedy?
I don't have anything on the books. I'm actually on a writing job right now. So basically from now till Christmas, I'm not doing much. Got a few, you know, few quick gigs here and there, but nothing crazy. Touring, if I do come to Chicago, it'll be probably 2016 sometime. I hope to come back. I haven't been there in a while. So.
Awesome. Well, when you do come back, I know me and Dave will be there. We'll mm-hmm. come check you out, hang out, have a few drinks.
Please, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to meet you guys in person.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If you want to hop back on and promote yourself for that tour, feel free to do that as well.
Yeah, thanks. Anytime.
I appreciate it. It was great talking to you. Can I plug my podcast really quick?
You can plug anything you want, man. I was just going to ask you, what do you got? Sell us on stuff. Bring it up.
I have, so I'm doing a new podcast for Fangoria.com. They have a new podcast network. It's called We'll See You in Hell. It's my friend Pat Walsh and myself doing commentary for horror movies. So each episode we do commentary for a different horror movie.
Cool.
yeah, we got about four out now. If you live in Denver, we'll be in Denver, Colorado at the Mile High Horror Fest. First weekend of October, doing a live show. So come out to that, and Jeff and Some Aliens, which is what I'm writing for now, comes out in 2016 on Comedy Central, and it's really going to be really funny, so check that out.
That's awesome. All right, Joe DeRosa, thanks very much for calling Nothing Important.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Be sure to follow Nothing Important online at nothingimportantpodcast.com. Find us on iTunes, on Twitter at NotImportantPC, and you can also find us on Facebook. Nothing Important is recorded with help from Third City Sound in Joliet, Illinois. Thanks for being awesome.